definition.
We are going to get started right away. This is going to be a really good lesson. Actually, they're all really good. But we're going to talk about being a control freak. And a lot of times we can be a control freak and we don't even realize it. So, did anybody do the challenge from last week?
Yes. About controlling what you
see. No, you know, last week I was telling Jan about how I got in a fight with my husband before I came last. Not really a fight. I just really irritated with him because he was chewing so loud. Like, seriously? Chew. I'm like, stop chewing.
My husband's like a horse. Chew.
Like,
I get it.
It's driving me crazy. I gotta leave the room. He's like, what's the matter? I said, I have to leave the room. Ah! You're like irritating me
it's
with
like
your
a
chewing.
Horse.
And then that was like the first chapter of the control freak.
It was. No. You will never guess how that got in there.
Just
because I know. So my husband likes Rice Krispies and Cheerios. And you know what? I've learned that you either have to start eating or leave.
Right.
If you start eating an apple or something, you'll be fine. Why are we supposed to be able to chew and they're not supposed to chew? It's so true, though. I mean, but you know what? When little things like that bother you, you have to admit, I mean, the guy's trying to eat something. You know what I mean? We have to let that go. I mean, there's just certain things.
But, you know, I start timing it.
Yeah.
Like, we're watching TV, and I'm in a chair, and he's on the couch chewing. And it's like, you have been chewing for 35 minutes. How can anyone chew for 35 minutes?
He munches all the time.
I know. Well, all you know what? Time. That's well. I'm in a big family, so yep. Someone's always chewing. So you just have to get over it. Because I will tell you,
did you get to
hi.
No.
And the fact of the matter is that you're glad he's around to chew. And
yes.
The fact of the matter
you
is
deserve
is
it.
Everyone's got to chew. You know what I mean? So, and what I used to do, because my kids used to get irritated at each other, so what I used to do with them, I'd say, love is not easily irritated. So if you're getting that easily irritated, then it means that you don't love them enough. So if you want to love somebody more, what do? You invest more in them, right? And so I would make them do their chores for a while so they wouldn't get so easily irritated. So start doing the chores. That's a good one. Hi, you guys. Come on in. We're going to start on chapter 3, being a control freak. And we're going to start right in just because this is a lot of stuff to cover. But when I started teaching classes in 1981, I did some stuff that was really super outdated. So, I mean, but because it was just a jumping board for me, so I would use it and then I would take off with it and throw all my stuff on the side and keep adding and adding. But it was getting difficult because a lot of times if people wanted to know about the class, people would take the book that we were jumping off from and the book wasn't suitable and pertinent anymore. And so it's good that we got this class updated a little bit. But I will say that the general principles that keep your marriages and relationships strong never change. Nice to see you again. But these are, it's really funny because this is the same things that I was teaching in there back then. And almost every book that I would do research in to see about the different things that keep marriages strong, to have this almost verbatim unilaterally the same things. So it's really interesting. Even pulling it up on Google, you know, you could pull up the things that really keep marriages strong. It's pretty much the same thing. And this never really goes away. But sex. If you give your husband your body, feed his ego, and feed him, he will cherish you forever. Women are the ones that make sex complicated. They are. They're the ones who, you know, oh, we're going to hold back, we're going to make it conditional, we're going to do this, we're gonna do that, you know. And men, it's just an easy thing. That's the way a lot of guys will communicate with you. That's the way a lot of times will, you know, open up their hearts to you and cherish you. And that's the first thing that will, you know, her relationship. It's so funny because we don't talk that much about sex in this course. So it is funny, though, that a lot of times what we will do is we would go, what do you want us to do for you? We'll make you a four-course dinner, your favorite cake. You know, we'll do this. But if we're not in the mood, we don't want to have sex with them. And it's just funny because, I mean, really, the two alternatives, one, you're going to be working for a day and a half. The other one, it's just like not a big deal, but sometimes it's just what we feel like doing for somebody is what we would want to do for them or them to do for us or what we're in the mood to do. And so I always say that whatever, if you want your husband to cherish you, feed his ego, you know, give him your body because it's his anyways. It says that once you get married, your body isn't even your own. So it's a gift that you give to your husband. So that is one thing, and I will say, and I know you're all thinking your husband travels a lot. It's easy for you to say. But that is one thing that I made it a point, just finding out how important that was in a lot of the materials that I was teaching, is I've never been one that would withhold sex in an argument or something like that. And I can say that that is about stepping outside of my box and everything, but I think that that really does keep your husband cherishing you. And I think that as far as timing goes and things like that, it's where, it's where they're, I think, more vulnerable, and they are able to communicate a lot, too, when they can trust you like that. And you are the only one that can meet that need in your husband, and it is a huge physical need for them. We don't understand it as much because it's not a huge driving physical need, but it is for them. And we want to be the only one that can meet that need. So we want to be careful that we're not making, being unreasonable or, unrealistic with that. But also, men need to be accepted for who they are. Most of the time, we don't think about changing them until after the wedding. That is so true. Like, one of the biggest things you'll always hear men say is they just want to be respected. Now, in our couples classes, my husband works a lot with men about being respectable, just like we talk a lot in our parts about being lovable. Because you can't control whether your husband loves you, but you can control whether you're lovable. And your husband can't control whether you respect him, but they can choose whether they're respectable. But since we can't choose whether they're respectable, and since it's really important for us to respect them, I like to say that if you can't respect every single decision that they make, at least respect their role in your life or who they are, or respect their position or respect their point of view. Do you know what I mean? I think it's really important sometimes that we just learn to respect somebody just because it's a choice of ours to respect them. And sometimes they may not, every little thing they do may not be deserving of respect, but yet we are still choosing to respect them. So I think that's pretty powerful. Also, men, they want to know their top priority in the woman's lives. I see men that just clamor for attention. They just need attention. And women, I will say, working with a lot of mothers prioritize their children over their husband. And that is a mistake, because your husband is going to be there after the children are gone. And you want to keep that relationship really strong. And you, honestly, the best thing that you could do for your kids is to show them that you prioritize your husband over them. It's healthy for the kids to know that the dad takes priority over them. And it's very bad and unhealthy for the kids to think that they're the run of the home and that they have more voice, more say, or more input than the husband does. Do you know what I mean? And I think in a lot of homes, we're having a lot of problems with authority because we're putting our authority wrong inside of our home. You know, I really believe that some of the times that I think that the best times to be a role model to your kids is when things aren't going your way. And the best time that you're going to be a strong character model to anybody, whether it's your kids, your friends, or anybody, is when things aren't going your way. I always say anyone can float down the lazy river, but that's really not what determines what we're made out of. It's when things are tough or when we don't agree, then we see what we're really made out of. And I think at those times when you choose to respect your husband and you say, you know what, your dad said that, this is what we're going to do. You know what, our job isn't to sit here and decide what we think about that. And you know, without even realizing it, just think when you send your kids to school and their teacher is saying something, or their coach, how supportive that is in teaching your kids to respect authority.
Yes, I have to say that I can tell, it might take a little while, but I can tell who's the households where it is the way that you're saying it should be, and the households where the kids run the house.
Right.
Because just the whole parent dynamic and working, like you Yeah.
You can see by the way they respect authority.
It's trouble. You know what I mean? It's trouble, and they're only in fifth grade when I have them, and I see it, and I think, oh, boy, when this kid gets to high school, it's going to be a nightmare for them.
It is.
And they don't...
They don't see it coming,
they
and they don't
it.
Even
no.
realize what they're doing is breaking down their kid's future. Because no offense, I used to tell
it's
my kids.
It's unrealistic. My mom's going to, dad's going to fix everything.
Right.
But they're not.
Or they're going to go
know,
in and contest things with the teacher. My son came home one day and he said, you know, well, the teacher said we're talking, but the other kid's mother's going to go in and talk to the teacher and tell her we're not talking. And I'm like, well, what do you think? Your teacher just wants extra work? That she wants to talk to me, and because you're talking, do you think she's just making that up? I said, you know, I don't think so. You're going to fix this. I'm not talking. You are. We're going in, and we're going to work this out with your teacher and find out a way that you are going to stop disrupting her class. So we went in, and I made him handle the whole thing, and they got really, really close after that, too. And I think she really respected him, and he respected her. But, you know, I could have broke down that respect. Or when my kids would come home and my son was voted to be on a varsity team when he was a JV age. And then he came home and he said, you know, he was always played. He was really good. He was an all-state player. But then a different coach came on and he came home. Oh, my coach doesn't like me. He's not playing me. I said, first of all, and you know because your dad was a coach. You probably heard this a million times from your dad. But, hi, Dad.
Sorry.
But you know what? I said, first of all, your coaches are playing to win. And this isn't about whether he likes you. There's something wrong. You need to go talk to him, find out what the problem is, why he isn't playing you, and you need to work on it. Because when you start being an asset to the team, he's going to play you. And so he went and he started working out with the coach. And you know what? We've got to realize that when we're jumping on the bandwagon with our kids against authority, we are not doing them any favors. Because one of the things I started to realize, and I think it really helped me, so when my kids were really little, I started to realize I was equipping them for the workforce. And let me tell you, when you go in to tell your boss what you think in the workforce, they really don't care. Like, if you go to tell them your opinion, and so I got my kids used to that. I said, oh, write your suggestions down and put them in the suggestion box under the seat. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. You know, that's really nice of them, but, you know, I mean, and I had to tell them, you know, I'm in charge around here, and too many heads are going to make a monster. We're not even a monster around here. And you know what? Even to the very end, that all came back as a benefit when I didn't even know it was going to do that, but when my son was getting ready to get married, and there was some of the things that he didn't agree with that I had his rules of the house, and he said, you know what, Mom? I don't agree with everything, but just because I respect you guys so much, and I'm so grateful for, you know, living here, I'm going to abide by those rules. He goes, I'm not saying I agree with them, but I'm going to abide by them. And so I think it's really important that we realize that what we're doing is we are demonstrating, that's the thing that is so big to me. The little things that we think are so little are so huge. And we don't realize that because we can just be thinking we're just having a quick, smart aleck retort or something. But what we don't realize is we're breaking down order in our kids' minds, too, or in people's minds that are around us. And so I think it is so important that we pay attention when things aren't going our way. Sometimes you can even have a little vernacular to remind yourself. Sometimes I'll just be having a little hissy fit because things aren't going my way, and I'll just go, oh, nothing's going my way. And, you know, and might as well laugh or my kids will laugh, but I like to do that just to say, okay, be on the lookout because now this is who you really are. When things aren't going your way, now your character is going to get tested. Now what are you going to show? Because when things are going your way, you know, it doesn't take any character because you're getting away. I used to walk in with my little girl that used to have temper tantrums, my little Krista, remember? And I used to go in, and she was so cute. She looked like Shirley Temple. She actually thought she was. She would say, I remember when I was on that show, I was like, but she had little curls, and I used to dress her so cute in little dresses. Remember, we used to, and she used to walk in, and everybody would be, oh, she's so cute. And I go, yeah, but wait till we're leaving the party. Then we'll see how cute she is. Because she just, when she was a strong will child. Now, I loved having her, and she needed that strong will, and I didn't want to break that strong will because later that strong will helped her to coast through high school and not get involved when some of her friends just really put her to the test. But I was grateful to have that strong will, but it definitely had to be tweaked, and it was going to be the strong will that was for the right things and not the strong will just to do what she wants, you know, and that's what we want to have. Is that okay if it stopped?
I don't think it stopped.
It's okay. It's still recording. Okay. So I just think, you know, we've got to know that men do want to be a top priority, and they want to be priority over the kids. That's why you will just have a baby, and your husband wants to go on a date, and you're like, I can't even leave the baby with anybody. Like, what do you want to go for a date? I'm not comfortable with this. But so many times, it was just once I was going on a business trip with my husband, and I had a great family, so I had my kids divvied up with them. And they were in great hands, but I still wanted to be home with my kids. It was so hard for me, and I kept remembering a lot of these things of make this time. And so then it just dawned on me, you know, if you're going to be there, just be there with your whole mind and body. You know, at that point, I remember I was going, and I thought to myself, you know what, I need to get my mind where my body is, because this is too vexing. To be here with him, thinking of them, then I'm that with them, I'm thinking of him. So I decided that wherever my body was, I was going to make myself be there 100%. That sounds like such a basic decision, but I'm going to tell you something that rocked my world, because that became a decision that I kept true to. So if I was with taking the time to go to coffee with, you know, my mom or a friend, I was there 100%. If I was going to take the time to do something and maybe mentor a young mom, I was there 100%. I stopped allowing myself to be thinking of other things. And I'm going to tell you something. I think that made a lot more progressive moments, like just moments that were full of more meaning. So if I was going to take a night out with my husband, I was getting into his head to think of what he's going to do, what his dreams are, where is he at, you know, talking to him, laughing with him, and I was 100% there with him. So then when the time came when I couldn't be with them, I was with my kids. Then I was 100% there with them. So I think it's really important that you realize if you are going to be out on that date night, be 100% there. Be thinking of creative ways that you can enjoy each other. You know, I always think of that, even especially with friends. We've had our world rocked recently because we've had a couple of suicides inside the church, young women. And I'm just thinking, they had the choicest friends. I mean, friends I would have picked for my personal friends. But I'm thinking, you know, sometimes I don't think we get deep enough with our friends. And I think that we have to have the awareness that different friendships have different levels. And if we're close with someone, we need to get in their case a little bit. It's just good to do that. It's good to not just fill your, you know, family get-togethers or your, you know, church get-togethers, especially with a bunch of fluff. I mean, I remember that we went to a pinochle party once. It was a get-together. And at the end, we found out this guy had so many things that were just breaking his heart and threatening his marriage. And I thought, oh, my goodness, we were just walking out the door. And I thought, I will never give anyone to my house again where we just do fluff. And so I started to think from the thinking, I want to do stuff meaningful. So you remember, we used to get couples together, but rather than putting, just having all the tables, just talking about fluff, where did you get that shirt, you know, what new thing do you want, what are you doing with your house, we started putting conversation starters, like what season are you with the Lord and why, you know, what's the best thing, with the biggest thing you ever had to trust God for, you know, how has God showed up as one of his names in the word, and what has that meant to you? Through that, I cannot even tell you, over a period of about 7 years when we were doing those get-togethers, I cannot even list for you the miracles that took place because we were getting underneath the surface of people's lives. And you know what? That's the kind of person I want to be. We were laughing because I was talking to one girl and she said to me, she said, whenever I saw you coming to the party, I would run out the back door. Because, you know, and we laugh about it now. Because she knew I was going to say, how are you doing with the Lord? Are you in the Word? You know, what are you doing? You know, and so now we laugh about it, but, and then another friend, like, she'd see me, and she tried to hide from me whenever I'd see her at the auto show. Say, go to the auto show, and she's like, She said, I knew you were going to ask me. I said, how are you doing with the Lord? She's like, I knew it. I got to get back to church. I got to get back to the Lord. But you know what? If I'm going to be remembered as somebody, I want to be remembered as someone that pulled greatness out of people. I want to be remembered as someone that challenged people to live bigger. I don't want to be remembered as someone that, oh, yeah, she was in my life. I mean, it didn't make any difference if she was or she wasn't. I mean, all we talked about was the latest thing that she was making or buying. It's, you know, I want to be someone that when I go up to someone, I can make a minute conversation with them count and encourage them. People need encouragement. And people aren't being real with each other because we're living in a Facebook age and a Twitter age, and we're you know, making it look so good and so easy. And everyone thinks that you have it so easy, or that you, you know, and they get discouraged so easily. I think it's so important that we use our minutes so wisely with what we do. And I think that when you're talking to someone, you know, go in there. When I go to a shower, I am like 100% there. I don't even care if I eat. I can even stay out at home. Like, my mom gets mad because I never sit down. But when I'm actually, I'm walking around seeing everybody. But you know what? I don't get a chance to see people a lot. So when I go around, I want to find out what's going on with them. You know, I ask them about their kids. I ask them about their family. I try to encourage them. Or like, oh, we're going through this. And, oh, did you ever think my favorite thing to do in that situation? Or one thing I've heard? Or just try to add some value to when you're going to a place. It's just so much fun, and it's so challenging. And then I always feel like when people, you know, they think of you, they know that you understand stuff that they're going through, and you almost become a person that is available for a call if they ever get discouraged. And I just think it's just so powerful to encourage people. I think we just have to go, like, below the first layer. And it's sometimes awkward, and you might sometimes fumble at it or feel, you know, and but just if you can gently learn to encourage people and find out, you know, what things they're dealing with, or how you doing with those two kids. You know, I know my mom said, or my friend said, one of the things that she used to say, one of the things that Phyllis Molino used to always say to me is, you're going to be sorry your house is so clean. And that just stuck in my head. You know, just something that you could just share and add, you know. And I think that's important. But also, men have strong ego needs. They do not like having their pride deflated. And you know what? We can do that so easily. I mean, we can do it. Oh, my goodness. Women are so good at this with their men. I get so embarrassed sometimes when I'm talking to somebody with their husband, because the woman will be correcting their English, correcting the day of Thursday. No, it was Friday. No, it was Thursday. Who cares? You guys are making this so awkward. We don't even care. Like, it's just so awkward. And you can understand why guys just are a little, like, they're like turtles. They just pull inside of their shell. Like, who wants to have a conversation when it's on, you're putting yourself under this microscope? I like to try to be a telescope and not a microscope. I like to see the big picture, the long vision. Like, what's the point of me interrupting this conversation? Or if you say something, I've been there. Just awkwardness in conversation. I'm sorry, this is not a social grace when somebody says something like, Oh, you know what? We're going to be doing this next Friday. Oh, I didn't know that. Yes, I told you last Wednesday. Who cares if you told them? Why do you have to embarrass him and make him look like he forgot it? Just be quiet. You know, say, oh, you know what? No, well, I'm sorry if I didn't mention it to you. If you didn't hear me, you know, this is what we're doing, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, instead of just making someone feel stupid, you know, you have to think about what you say, because men are hypersensitive to their ego. They want to look cool around other people. And it's funny because I say, let them look cool. My kids used to come home and they'd be like, so-and-so thinks they're so cool. I go, yeah, they are. So what? Why can't they be cool? You're cool too. It doesn't take your coolness away. Like, they can be cool. You can be cool. We're all cool. You know, I just think, you know, sometimes we get so threatened. It's like, you know, if, oh my goodness, if you're cool, then I can't be cool, so I better take your cool from you so I look really cool. That doesn't make you look cool. It makes you look really dumb. And so I just think it's really important to let everybody be cool. We know that everybody has gifts. Everyone has talents. You know what I mean? And especially be aware of men. I don't care if they're your husband, your son, your brothers. You know, they don't need to be corrected, cut down, you know, and you know, besides the fact that most guys, if you have a jury and witnesses and photographs, they're still going to deny it anyways. A lot of times. So why even bother trying to prove it? Because they're going to be so interested in saving their face. You know what I mean? Try to make it easy for someone to save face. That's another thing I always try to teach my kids and try to teach people, is if somebody's made a mistake, you know, let it, make it easy for them to get back in. You know that one guy on the Fokker family or whatever, he would say, "You, I've got my eye on you. You're going to break the circle of trust, you know. Well, we have this little circle of trust going, you know. But if someone breaks it, you have to make it easy for them to step back in. You know, otherwise you're going to ruin the whole day. So I realize people make mistakes. I'm not trivializing their mistakes. But if they say they're sorry, then, you know, there's not anything you can do to put the vase back together. And, I mean, then... so what? Let it go and redeem the night and let him back in. Let people back in really easily, and then you'll find that you won't repel so many people, you know, and they, you won't be sitting trying to, you know, making people feel awkward. A lot of times, too, I find that when you're lifting the standard, you guys are here learning about bettering your relationships. So a lot of times you're learning to stop talking mid-sentence. You might have actually said, okay, I'm not seeing a bunch of negative stuff anymore. So even in conversation, people will start to notice, like, wow, you're not even joining in this conversation, or you're turning everything around to a positive, or you're just a goody two-shoes, or whatever. Sometimes people will get threatened by you without you even doing anything. So you have to be gracious to people, you know, and make them know that this is what you decided to do, and, you know, if they're doing whatever, you're not there to make them feel awkward, you know what I mean? Or to be self-righteous, because self-righteousness can just be as bad of a thing as some of the things that we're refraining from doing. You know what I mean? And then, honestly, anybody that is ever, ever intimidated by you, you will never be able to reach with anything good into their life. So it just takes away your ability to be, to come alongside and help somebody. Because if they're threatened by you, they're not going to receive anything from you. So I just think it's really important not to, you know, to have your standard, not to diminish it by any means, but then not to hold your standard to other people. You know, it was funny because I love the part of scripture that taught me that. It's when they're, right after Judas went and hung himself, then Jesus told the disciples to go wait in the upper room, and that he was going to send another. He said that he would, let his bishopric another take. So he said that someone else would take that place of Judas. So he said, just go wait for me, and I'm going to endue you with power from on high. And so they all went to the upper room, and I have to laugh because that would just be something I would do. They all started having a business meeting, like, who was going to replace Judas? And then they started putting all these parameters on him. You know, Jesus needed to be with them for the whole time. They had to do this. They had to do this. Most of them didn't do all those things. You know what I mean? So they're going to put all that on the new person. And so they ended up casting lots. And then Matthias picked the lot. And so Matthias was the one chosen. We never hear about Matthias again. And I think it's one or two chapters later, Saul gets, you know, thrown from his horse and joins the crowd. So it's just funny. God's got it under control, but we're putting all these requirements on people, you know. So, and men love joyful and happy wives. No man wants a miserable person next to him. This is my wife. Can't you tell how wonderful I am to live? She's depressed and miserable. And if I look at her, I get miserable. So, you know, I mean, I don't care. My husband is very, stressed out. I don't know. He has a lot of stress on him. So a lot of times he's very, you know, comes off really stern. People get scared of him until they really get to know him, because he's really not stern. When you get to know him, you know he's not stern from the trip. But if people are at work and you say his name, they're scared of him because he is, you know, everyone's scared of him. It's just funny. You're his wife, you know. So I have to realize that my husband, sometimes when he gets that in his mode, he just is so stern, you know. And I let him be that way. I mean, I just, you know, I don't change who I am. You know, I just You know, sometimes he'll get really riled up easily, you know, and I just let it be his personality, and I just step back, and we're just happily different. You know, it doesn't work to change him, so, you know, I just know that that's just his personality, and I get the whole kit and caboodle. So, and I don't make him make me unhappy. I like my husband to know that I'm consistent. I don't want him to come home and wonder, you know, what kind of mood is she in? I want my husband to know I'm pretty consistent, that he can just count on me to lift up his spirits. And there's nothing I love better, and it happens so much now because he's having the hardest time of his life right now, but he'll call me and go, I just needed to hear your voice. And I know that that didn't happen by accident with five kids. I used to have to keep little nice things that they said when he would call, because otherwise I'm going to tell him a bunch of stuff that he can't do anything about anyways. He's at work. So why load him up with all this stuff that he can't really do that I can handle? So I would try to lighten his day so that when he contacted me in the middle of the busy day, that he would say, oh, that was such a pleasant experience. I would like to repeat it. Not like, whoa, I'm not calling her from work anymore. I can't handle her. I'm the boss. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you don't realize how much pressure is outside the door. So I made it so whenever anybody, my kids or my husband, came through our doors, it was a safe place. It was a place where we loved and accepted each other, where no one was allowed to cut into other people. If people's friends came over that didn't like my other kids, I told the kids, if your friends don't like my other kids, my kids aren't going, your friends are. So, you know, this is our home. You know what I mean? So I just think it's really important that you keep your house a safe place, and that, you know, you are consistent. Be consistent. Be someone that your kids can count on, that they're not afraid to, you know, that they know you're going to be pretty consistent. Also, men don't want you to fix their problems, but they appreciate your confidence in them and your encouragement. I like that because there's so many things you can learn later on in communication. And it's really fun because a lot of times your husband will be saying something to you, like, I'm going to have this hard time, and you're trying to encourage him. Oh, yeah, you can handle that. You know, they don't want you to say that. They want you to say, wow, I don't know how you're going to do that. So that afterwards they can feel like they really did something awesome. You think you're encouraging it by minimizing something that they're saying to you. You're not encouraging it. You're making him feel wimpy for making a big deal out of something that you're taking away the heaviness from. So a lot of times we're going to learn to really hear what they're saying and to hear what they're looking for. Sometimes they just want you to say, wow, I don't know how you're going to do that. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait to hear how you handle that one. And then when they come back and tell you, they feel like, wow, look at it, it was a match to me. Sometimes you don't realize it. They're saying it to you, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's nothing you can do. And they're like, geez, you know, she's making me feel stupid that I even mentioned it. You know what I mean? So really listen, and sometimes, you know, too, sometimes when you're talking to a friend, and they just have such a big thing. First of all, a lot of problems you really can't fix. But sometimes, even just if someone can't fix my problem, sometimes I just need someone to come and as soon as I'll share something that I'm going through, sometimes if someone just picks it up with me, it just lessens the load. Sometimes I don't expect an answer to fix the problem. And sometimes we women are such fixers. We want to just find the solution. Sometimes it's just good to listen to somebody, you know, who's going through stuff. But also, men like their women to be feminine and not try to act like men. And I know my husband appreciates when I help him do some, you know, big things around here, but I think he really likes it, you know, that I act, you know, more feminine than him. But men like their wives to be their lovers and don't want to be mothered by their wives. And we've already said that. No one's going to be romantically interested in their mother. So we don't want to mother our husbands. You know, it's just not a good, it just, you know, that's not the role I want with my husband. But men don't like women who act like they're smarter or braver than them. Yeah, no one likes it. I don't think that's true just for men. No one likes a know-it-all, you know. Men like look to their wives to make their homes peaceful homes. I think that is pretty universally true because I often like to think of a guy's house without the girl in it. It's so different. I mean, we were touring cabins up north. You could definitely tell which homes he had a woman there and which ones didn't. I mean, oh my goodness. You know, guys left alone. So we want to make our homes peaceful. Also, they appreciate kindness and generosity in their wives. And they like when their wives look the best they can. You know, it's always nice, just like that girl I think I had mentioned to you. I used to work at Gilda's Club, and this girl had Parkinson's disease. And she was all bent over and shaking, but you could tell that she had it going on. You know, she was blind. She was doing her pictures all the time. I think the lady was, you know, she was a real cute little hacha-macha-cha. And so here she's trying to deal with breast cancer. Right on the heels of that comes Parkinson's disease. But it was just unbelievable that every time she'd get on the walker, she'd make her way to the bathroom, she'd come out with her lipstick on. You knew her husband was on his way to pick her up. And I just think that's so nice. I just remember when I was younger, it made such an impact on me, as it will on your kids. If just a few minutes before your husband's going to come home, you just take a few minutes to look and make sure there's no more sleep in your eyes, you know, that you may have two of the same socks on, you know, you put mascara on both eyes, you know. But I mean, just to take a little once over, you know, shoot the house together. I know my husband really likes order, so last time I did it before I come home, I go, come on, let's pick this up really fast. Daddy's coming home, you know. And it's just nice to know that he's having a little welcome. And I always tell people, take that 1 minute when your husband's coming home. It only has to be a minute, but make it a special thing. Stop what you're doing. Go over. Hey, glad to see you. Come on in. I'm glad you're home. You know, take your coat off and then come on in and talk to me if you have a minute or whatever. But, you know, just takes a few sentences, and in 1 or 2 minutes, you can make someone feel like they're entering into a safe place and a place where they're, you know, someone is excited to see them. When you have kids, make your kids say, Daddy's home. Come and say hi to Daddy. Let's come and surprise him. You know what? Let's wait for him here. You know, that just makes such a huge difference. I've had so many women say that was so opposite of what they'd normally do, and they would be challenged, and it would be almost awkward, but how that has just totally rocked their family, and just how awesome that is. So even if it's really outside, stop and take that minute and make someone feel really super special. Also, they like to feel like they're the kings of their castle, the stretch of dollar. They want a woman they can trust. And we know that because Scripture says that the heart of a Proverbs 31 woman, the heart of her husband safely trusts in her, and he has need of nothing. So when, you know, when you're worthy of trust, your husband doesn't need anything. I mean, a loyal wife, a virtuous woman, who can bind anymore? I'm telling you, women are not loyal to their own husbands. Then you wonder who the heck they're loyal to. You got to be loyal to your husband, or else you're really probably, it's just like being disloyal to yourself, because you two are one. So you want to be loyal to your husband, because really that's where it starts. When guys are going to Judea and Samaria and then to the uttermost parts of the world, I think he's saying, start it where you're at home. Start it here. If you start your loyalty, your virtue, your character at home, and then start bringing it out. Because if you're not virtuous at home, it's kind of like not living from the inside out, and it's not really you. Because you have to be virtuous with the people that test it the most anyways. And those are going to be people at home. So, also men like women that don't insist that everything be done their own way. They like to be respected for the way that they do things, even if it's different. I learned that too. My husband, seriously, my husband's probably folded maybe 3 loads of clothes in our whole life together. And I'm just saying 3 because I know that it's probably more than he's really folded. And he's cooked about, besides grilling, he's cooked one time when I broke my humerus a while ago. He cooked, I think, 3 different meals that he got the recipe for. It definitely wasn't the way that I would have done it, but I didn't make the same mistake about the pumpkin pie, and I shut up and I just let him do it, you know, and I was glad. And I made him so proud of himself. I don't know why I didn't keep doing it. He just doesn't have time. But it wasn't definitely not because of my response anyways. But, and anyways, you could find, you know, that you want to live up to the potential that in the pattern for marriage established 2,000 years ago. And a lot of those things are things that we can find in Scripture, and they're things that still work, and they're things that were at the beginning when I was teaching the class, and things that are still predominant now. But I love the book Sacred Influence, What a Man Needs from His Wife to Be the Husband She Wants, and it was talking about how David McCullough found a letter by John Adams to his wife, Abigail, in the heat of the war. And he said, I love this quote so much. We can't guarantee success in this war, but we can do something better. We can deserve it. So you know what? Sometimes you cannot guarantee success in your marriage, in any relationship. You may have a friendship you're trying to solve it. You can't guarantee success, but guess what? You can deserve it. You can line yourself up under that ball and be in a position that you should be successful. And he said, we can't control how the war turns out. That's in the hands of God. But we can control how we behave. We can deserve success. And that's the way I want to live my life, is so that I deserve success. Now, whether every single relationship I have is successful, I just at least want to deserve success. You know, I want to look and see what I can do better, because that's the only thing I can control. So, I like Napoleon Bonaparte's letter to his wife. He said, I insist you have more strength. I'm told you're always crying for shame. That is very bad. Be worthy of me and develop strong character. And then he says that if she's always crying, everyone thinks that, or he'll think she has no courage or character. I do not like cowards. An empress should have heart. And I think that's cool to, you know, a lot of husbands don't tell you or write things like that. But I like that. Here he was out fighting a battle, and he comes home and his wife is this weakling that with no character, crying all the time, no strength. And you know what? I think men are really proud of their wives when they can handle stuff. I mean, I think, you know, I know a lot of times my husband will just say, people say something about my kids, and my husband will go, my wife did so much with them. I wasn't really there. And he's proud of the things that I did. And I'm happy that he is, because I'm proud of what he's done too. And honestly, if I'm not proud of him, who do I want to be proud of him? You know, his dad's gone and his mom lives in Las Vegas. And I am about it. I mean, if you think of the people on my husband's cheerleading team, it is pretty much, I've got the pom-poms. And that's about it. And, you know, if you think of people who are on your husband's cheerleading team, it's probably pretty much the same. It's very rare that a husband will have a lot of cheerleaders. You know, we, on the other hand, we get way more cheerleaders, way more people to encourage us. I mean, I know, just looking at you guys in this room, I know that you could probably pick up the phone and you could probably call four or five of your good friends that would just help you through stuff and encourage you, because you guys have some good friends and good family. But your husband won't have time to do that. You're just about it. So if you're not doing it, he's not getting much encouragement. Usually not at work, not happening. You know, usually not at the baseball game, even if they do have a friend that like at a baseball game. It's not going to be about their personal stuff. So it's really pretty much your job. So I just remember that if you have to throw a pom-pom in the corner, mm-hmm. You know, if you're visual like me, you know what I mean? I have to see stuff to remember it. But, you know, do those little things to remember. You're your husband's cheerleading team, usually. And if you're not cheerleading for him, it's pretty sad for him, you know? So we have it so different that a lot of times we don't even realize that. You know, it's so easy for us to get encouraged. Sometimes we don't realize how much guys need encouragement. And, you know, even that goes for if you have brothers or if you have sons that are especially going into college and, you know, high school ages. You know, they're supposed to be this tough guy. I saw it a lot when my kids were graduating and everyone's asking them what they're going to be. They didn't know what they wanted to be. You know, they don't even know what the choices are. And everybody, they're supposed to pick their, you know, career when they're by the time they're starting 12th grade. And I saw, just by seeing their responses, I knew it was getting them so stressed out and nervous. And, you know, and you have to start encouraging your boys and your, you know, the people in your life, because guys don't get a lot of encouragement. They just don't. But Anyways, I like that the saying that he said, be worthy of me. We should want to be worthy of each other and to live worthy. In Matthew 10:38, where it said, anyone who doesn't take up his cross daily to follow Jesus isn't worthy of him. So being worthy shows me that it involves sacrifice. And we should look for sacrificing. You know, all great athletes, all people that achieve great things, they have to sacrifice something. So rather, and this sounds really, you know, it's against our human nature, but really when we find an opportunity to sacrifice, you should look for chances to sacrifice to show your husband you care. You know, and I even tell my kids that. I said, you know what? I'm your mom. You should be looking, like, if I need something. I said, you should be like, wow, I finally get to do something for my mom to show her how important she is. People, we should be looking for ways to show each other how much we care. That is a discipline, but it is so important. We should look for opportunities. And honestly, one thing I've done to encourage you is I realize, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day. But there, I don't even know, the minutes. If we took the minutes of 24 hours, it's way more minutes. So don't underestimate the value of a minute. A lot of times when I've done something for somebody, sometimes I don't have a lot of time. I don't have hours. But I have minutes. And I can throw a text and I can make a call on the way somewhere. Or I can, if someone's going through something, I can run a sheet of labels off and stick them on there with, stamps. And then every day scrawl a few sentences and throw it in there and drop it in the mailbox. I have minutes. But whatever you have, like sometimes do you guys find yourself a lot of times you wait for the big opportunity to do something for someone and it never comes? So it baked my sister and I were just laughing as I was setting up because my sister that died, her kids, we tried to do something special for them for their birthday. We decided to do that, like she and I. But it was terrible because we were saying, did we ever get Angie's present? We talked about it so much. We wanted it to be so special. And we asked her, we asked Shalene, and we wanted it to be so special. We never did anything. So now we not only did something really special, we did nothing even menial because we were so interested in making it so good. You know, it would have been better off if we wouldn't have found and looked for the perfect gift, if we would have just stuck a gift card in the mail and just at least made her feel, know that we remembered her birthday. Now, when was her birthday? January. That's how long it got away with us. So, you know, we were deciding, well, should we double her up next birthday? And I said, it's never too late for a gift. I'm just giving it and saying, you know what? We want something so good, we didn't do anything. And we just realized that. But you know what? Seriously, when you're thinking, oh, I wish I could do this, this, and this. If you can't, just do something. You know, it doesn't have to be something great. Just do something so you're not in the same boat, you know? So, let's see. We're not trying to make someone, you know, act a certain way. We're trying to control our own responses. So how can you tell when you're entering control-freak territory? What we do is sometimes we make plans and commitments for our husband. A lot of times I do make plans, commitments, but I like to run it by my husband, even if I'm just sending him a little note. Can you do this? You know, just to keep him up on it. You know, or just assuming that your husband wants to do something or that, you know, he knows that you want to do something. I think another thing by being a control freak is just assuming that your husband knows what you're thinking or what you're doing. I find that men, you know how in Dumb and Dumber they said, not one in a million or something. You know, he says, do I have a chance? The girl says, yeah, like one in a million. He says, oh, I have a chance. It's like, no, you don't have a chance. But sometimes I think we think our husbands, they don't get it. You have to lay it out for your husband. If you think that he knows how important it is to you that he takes you out for Sweetest Day, he doesn't know. If you haven't, like, laid it right out there, forget the hints. Guys are so busy. They're not looking for hints. I think you're doing everybody a disservice by thinking that you could hint to a guy and have them catch on. I just think it just doesn't work. And so you have to just point blank say. So, if I choose my husband a lot, and I'll go, because my birthday's coming up. I'll say, my birthday's coming up. I can't wait to see what I'm getting. And they'll be like, nope, this year I'm cutting back. I'm not giving it. I go, oh, he always says that. You know, tell the kids. And we have a lot of fun with it. But I just think it's really important that you don't just suggest or hint that you say something.
I just sent an email with a picture, with pictures.
And that's fine.
And I just put Christmas ideas. And he would, until then, he never said anything. I'm like, because there was just something, and it was going on sale. And so I just, like, you know, put the dates and stuff on there. And I said, have you gotten any emails from me? And he goes, no, nothing interesting. You know, but yeah, I resorted to that because they don't know.
They don't know. And honestly, the worst thing you can do, is say, it doesn't matter, don't get me anything. We already learned that, first of all, where you deposit, there your heart is. You know what? Even with your kids, don't ever tell your kids they don't have to acknowledge your birthday, because you don't need whatever it is they're giving you, but they need to give it to you. And you know what? They need to honor you, and they need to, honor your special days, and they need to respect you. And when you say it doesn't matter, oh, don't worry about it, you are not doing them a favor. And you know what? How horrible it would be for you to have birthdays and just no one acknowledge it, and they just, it's nothing special. That doesn't do good for them, and it doesn't do good for you. It doesn't do good for the way that they should be investing in the people that they love. You know what I mean? So that's a good thing to know. But also, you need to be, you can monitor your husband. You listen for, you know, incorrect English, scrutinize his table. Oh, and there it is. Get annoyed when he chooses ice.
Choo, 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 choo.
Choo, choo, choo. Instead, work on your tolerance. And so, also, you speak to your husband in the wrong tone. You need to be up the tone. You know, calm down and communicate with the same respect you want to be spoken to. Listen to your tone and tweak your habits. Sometimes we just have to tweak our habits. We get in bad habits. Just, you know, listen to yourself. And drop the condescending stuff. Because when people talk to me in a condescending way, I almost just kind of want to block it out so I don't get my feelings hurt. So it doesn't really reach me anyway. So if you really want to reach your husband, don't be condescending, you know. Sometimes it's like the gentler you talk, then the more they'll think about what they're doing rather than, I know when my kids used to be younger, I'm not a big yeller anyways, but I never wanted to be the one, you know, sometimes the mother's like, blah, blah, blah. And then the kid, instead of looking at what they did, they're going, psycho mom, you know, and then they're just looking at how you handle that. You're so out of control that they never have to even look at what they did wrong. However, if you say, you know, you really should have been thinking about what you did. You know, I don't know what we're going to do about this. I need to think about it, but that was way out of control, and there's going to be some repercussions for that. And then, you know, it says it's kindness that leads to repentance. So if you ever want somebody to really be sorry or somebody to really change, you know, you have to do it God's way, and it's when you're really kind that someone will really change out of the true heart change, not just be scared of your loud screaming and just, you know, pretend to be sorry just to get peace. You know, you want a real lasting change. If someone is going to be sorry, it's going to be kindness that leads to change. And a lot of times, you get psycho, they're not going to ever look at what they did. They just won't. But you know, you tell him what to wear and how to handle his grooming. Well, I know some people. My mother-in-law always dressed my father-in-law. So sometimes it's, you know, if he likes you to do, that's one thing. But if you're nitpicking him all the time, you know, listen, my husband, he dresses in a two-piece suit to go to work on a plane and everything. So if he wants to wear his checkered green shorts with his red running shirt, I'm just like, whatever. You know, it's just like, I might mention it to him, you know, or if he says, does this match, I'll say, not really, but, you know.
You're wearing it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't care. The clothes don't make a man. He's, you know, it's fine. But, he's colorblind anyway, so a lot of times he will ask me and I'll be able to say, no, that, you know, it doesn't match. I'll say, well, how about this? And I'll say, better. Not there, but better. But a lot of times I'll try to put him because he doesn't really know what to do. Also, this is good when your strong opinions are affecting other relationships. Sometimes you can't really see it with one person, but then all of a sudden everyone's seeing the same thing about you. Okay, well, if it's happening in one relationship, it could be the other person. But if it's happening right across the board and everyone's saying you're crabby or everyone's saying you're hard to deal with, you might be getting a little hard to deal with. You might have to look at a few things and tweak your behavior a little bit. So I like to say, look at across the board. Be open to giving someone else a chance to make a decision. Back off and allow other people's input. Force yourself to play something that you don't like just because you want to be with people. You know what? That's good discipline anyway. Don't pick the restaurant all the time. You know, so I get so, I'm so boring. I could eat the same three restaurants my whole life and never get tired of them. And I don't even want to go to another restaurant. I'm fine with those three. But it's sometimes I need to let other people pick. So I'm just like, well, wherever we go, I'll find something to eat. Where do you want to go? You know? And it's just good to let other people pick sometimes just so that we don't get too bossy. You know, because we can start getting our own way too much. We can get bossy. So I like Philippians 2:21 in the Message. It says, most people around here are looking out for themselves with little concern for the things of Jesus. Well, we all have a sin nature, and we all can start looking for our own things, you know, and instead of considering someone else's needs above our own and sacrificially loving and without expecting anything in return. What we feed grows. What we starve dies. And that is applicable to so many different situations. If you want something to grow, feed it. Give it more fuel. Put more energy into it. If you want something to die, stop energizing it. Stop feeding it. Stop doing it. Stop thinking it. And it will die. So if you have bad habits, you know, don't feed them. If you have good habits, keep feeding them. I'm not going to go through the things that people want to change in your husbands because everyone knows what they want to change. And there's a lot of things you want to change. But, you know, what we're trying to do is accept him and look to his strong side and the things he's good at rather than being determined to control and correct his weaknesses. Sometimes, honestly, we think that we're doing him a favor, you know, so that he can appear in public more often. You'll find pretty much that the women who have done their husband those favors, they usually aren't even appearing in public more often. They're probably not even appearing in public that often, right? Isn't that true, Pat? If you start picking people out, they don't want to do stuff. You know, you start controlling the way your husband dresses when you're young and, you know, what they're saying and everything, pretty soon you're going to find you're going to take all the fun out of going anywhere. And first of all, it's hard enough to get guys to want to go anywhere in the first place. So they don't want to take out any fun from it because a lot of times they like to just stay at home and watch the football game anyways. So also when I find myself trying to change my husband, I ask myself why I can't accept him just the way he is. You know, oh, grab a water. Yeah, sorry, I forgot to remind everybody, feel free to grab wires. But sometimes I'll say, you know, why am I not accepting him the way he is? Seriously, most husbands aren't constantly trying to change their wives. Most of them aren't. But we're still trying to constantly change them. And it's not that is not a tribute to who we are in being so helpful. It's a bad thing, you know? And I just think it's really bad. I always say if I start picking on my husband, I notice usually I'm crabby or usually I'm too tired. And then sometimes I'll just say to myself, why is it that I think that he should, you know, I'm his image consultant or something. Why does he have to answer me? He's just fine without me at work. He'll be fine. But when you purpose of loving with his goods and bads, ups and downs, don't try to change those little things. Okay, so while we were at a marriage retreat, we were supposed to write the stuff that we were that bothered us about our spouse. And so we went into a separate room, we did it, and then we came back. I don't even think my husband wrote anything down. It's like, I just love you the way you are. I had like 3 pages of stuff. I was so embarrassed. So it was really bad. And I said, you know what, that has got to change. That was not a good retreat anyway. I didn't like that exercise. I don't think that was good unless... Now, if we did something like that in this class, which we do in the first couple lessons, then we say you're not supposed to think of that list. You're supposed to crumple that list up and, you know, look to his what he has going for him. But I didn't like that. I don't think that was a healthy thing anyways. And it was very embarrassing because I think pretty much every couple was in the same boat. But, you know, it is funny. Why do we try to change our husbands? You know, we may see blind spots. Sometimes we're embarrassed of their faults. That's your husband. It's not you. You know? And honestly, it's not you until you start jumping in there trying to correct him. Then everyone's looking at you anyways. You know? So you might as well just up make the problem be his. Who cares? I mean, if the guy's, you know, coughing up, you know, whatever guys do, you know, it drives you crazy. And, you know, oh, well, this is a small price to pay to overlook that, to have a great marriage. So just overlook it. I like this one Indian lady. She had four kids, and her husband died. And she went at his funeral, and everyone was giving all these great accolades, and she got up, and she said, I'm going to tell you about my husband. He was a doctor. And she said, you know, everybody's been saying all these great things, but you should have heard him at night. I mean, three sheets to the wind. I mean, he had wind coming out this way. He's snoring on the other hand. And she said, he, you know, and it sucks at the end of the day, this and that and that. And she, like, listed, like, several of these things that, you know, were bothering her. And then she said, and you know what? I would take all of those things back because that would mean he's still with me. And she said, you know what? I just want my kids to know, because she had four kids sitting there. She said, my husband wasn't perfect, but I would take any of those things back to know that he's still with me. So that just makes me want to live a little differently and appreciate, because I know I would feel the exact same way, because my husband is definitely worth it. You want to say something? Oh, which, raise your hand, we go with me. But it is true. It says, better to live alone in a tumble-down shack than to share a mansion with a nagging spouse. Human nature wants to avoid pain more than seek pleasure. So if your husband is normal, he's going to want to avoid pain more than seek pleasure. So you may not be worth it if you're inflicting pain. So we want to work on this because it doesn't happen easily, you know? I'll tell you, one day I was getting my car fixed, and it was a young guy, and he had just gotten married. I said, congratulations. I said, you don't have to fix my car. I might fix it tomorrow. I'll come back tomorrow. He said, no, I do not want to go home. He said, I would rather be here working. He was a mechanic. He didn't even have a glorious job. He was working hard. And he said, oh. He said, no, you do not know my wife. He goes, I am better off here. They had just gotten married. Like, how sad that is, right? But,
what, you know what you said about the Indian lady? My friend, I met her mother-in-law, and her husband was the town drunk, and he would go on these binges, and he would come home and swear and smack her around and everything. But do you know that she never... You would have thought she was married to a saint. It's like God takes a lot of that away, the bad habits and that. And what you know, zero in on is all the kind things that he did.
Right.
And this man wasn't 100% bad. It was when he would drink.
Right.
Know? But if you talk to her, you'd never know how he really was.
Isn't that beautiful? That's not a tribute to him. That's a tribute to her.
Yes. Yes.
Because everyone knew, and yet she chose to see the best in her husband.
And that's like that Indian lady, too.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so true. We just have to, learn, too, you know. Sometimes women will use their husband's lapses as an excuse to have a lot severe lapses in their own character. Mm-hmm. You know, that'll be their excuse to you know, become a nag or become self-righteous or, you know, whatever, or yell or whatever, be condescending. You know, they, instead of having one person have the problem, they'll use that excuse in, to justify their own problems. And that is so bad. Also, we have to learn to be reasonable and realistic. Know your husband's going to have strengths and weaknesses. And I love that example, Pat, because that's extreme and it's true. Also, examine yourself for pride, self-righteousness, and inflated feelings of superiority, and know how harmful these character deficits are and the sins that they are. Also, release your husband from your grip and give him the opportunity to be himself. You know, let him be himself. Let him have his things that he will be sorry for later, and maybe some of the things he'll be really proud of later. And just live to deserve success and live to inspire success. And you know what? You might find that you can be a really positive, just a positive, you know, influence on him, you know, to encourage him that he doesn't need to resort to this or that. But even if not, you won't be self-righteous and you'll still learn to accept and love him for who he is. Love is the greatest force there is, too. Don't compare your husband to other people. Give up the role of being your husband's image consultant, trainer, or 24/7 critique manager. Refuse to see anything except for good in your husband. Learn when to speak up about what you admire him and when to shut up when you're faced with things that you don't admire. Also, regardless of for the reasons or justifications that you want to, when you analyze the reasons not to try to change them, it's easier to see why you should let those things go. Because, you know, we can look at all the reasons that we want to change our husbands, but then whoever takes the time before you're in a class to look at the reasons why you don't want to change your husband. I mean, I'm sure none of us ever really looked at reasons why we don't want to change other people. So when you see those reasons, then it's easier to let it go and say, you know what, there's more on this side of the equation than that side, and I'd rather not try to change them because it is going to not result in the things that are going to be for a strong relationship. So once you come to the understanding that you need to let go of changing people and your husband, you can identify how to and change even the nicest control freak habits you get into. So why shouldn't you try to control your husband or others? And this is really good as a mom. And, you know, I'm sure once your kids become adults, it's a different thing, isn't it? Because, you know, when they're kids, it's one thing. And when they're adults, it's a different thing. And, you know, you can't control people. Why shouldn't you control your husband or people? It's not your responsibility. Know your role, know, and stay there and enjoy it. First of all, it's not your role to change your husband. There was nothing in the ceremony, license, or understanding that set you up as the judge, jury, and rich consultant. So probably a good reason you won your husband's heart is because you didn't judge him. So rather, he felt you admired and respected him. I can pretty much safely say that nobody got a husband at the altar because they didn't respect him. They probably felt like you loved and respected him at that time. So one of the things that helps me a lot in all my, you know, life is just knowing what my role is. So a lot of times if somebody will say, oh, you should be doing this and this, I'll be like, wait, what is my role in that relationship? It kind of helps me to know what I should be doing and to put limits, healthy limits, or to take the time to do something if I need to because of my role. But I'll say, what is my role? Is it your role to change your husband? No. Do you recite the things your father did that he doesn't do, or leave things to read, or drop hints, or try to make him feel guilty? You know, if you are operating as the judge and jury or image consultant, you cannot be the wife, lover, friend, and soulmate at the same time. So if you are choosing one role, you actually are putting on a whole different robe as a judge than the lover, and you can only pick one. So you have to pick one. What do you want to be? Do you want to be the judge and jury, or do you want to be the soulmate, lover, best friend? You have to make a choice because you can't be both of them. Because when you take on one role, you obscure the other. You have to make a pick and go with it. Men thrive on admiration, and a critic's role, by definition, is not to admire but to express an unfavorable opinion of something. So when we're critiquing a husband or being critical, we're saying negative stuff. So you can't be looking for good and bad at the same time. So you have to pick one and start looking for things to compliment, and you'll find them. And it's better to influence a man than to demand things from him. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Who will set a limit to the influence of a human being?" First of all, it's really hard for a guy to take orders from a woman. They're really not meant to do that. So a lot of times, it's like this picture. How do you like these pictures? They're so cute. I had to get clip art. So there's your husband. There's you blocking him from hearing from God, and here's God. So here's you. You know, you're standing between him and God. A lot of times I thought that, you know, if I would try to put something on anybody, even if I tried to put something on my kids, or, you know, oh, this is what you have to do, then it becomes a burden for them. When God shows it to somebody, then it becomes a freedom. Think of something in your life that you had to change. Like for me, it was probably giving up piano lessons when I had my fourth kid, because I used to do a lot of big concerts and stuff like that, and I loved it. And then finally, it was just like a lot of people were saying, how are you doing that with four kids? You can't do that. And every time they said it, I was getting resentful. I think of trying to quit. And then even my husband dared to suggest I quit. I was like, why are you doing that? But then not even a little while passes, and finally, when I started to see the confusion it was causing, and I just had it on my heart to quit, it was a freedom to me. It wasn't a burden. And so I think that sometimes we put burdens on people to line up and do things a certain way, when a lot of times if we would just get out of the way and let them hear and make the decision and come to the point, it might be a little after we saw it. It may never be, you know, but at least it will be then. It's so funny. I used to always say, my husband worked so much, and I had little kids, and he was always traveling. And so I used to always wait for the day thinking, you know, one day he's just going to wake up and just say, you know what, I'm working way too much, and I'm so sorry I worked so much. And then that was not helping me. So I was waiting for this one day before I would start appreciating my life and everything. So then all of a sudden one day, the biggest thing that helped me was, he will never do that, probably. He may never wake up and say, I wish I would have worked less. I wish I would have been home more. He may not ever do that. I know he loves being home more. I know he can't. He's so logical. He would never say, I wish I could be home more, because he can't be home more. So why would he even put that on himself? And so once I got used to the fact that, no, he probably won't say that. And so he may have to be on the phone at my son's wedding. He may not make it to my kids having their grandchildren. But this is what he has to do and how he's got to live his life and pick his job and everything. And you know what? I'm not waiting for him to say a certain thing or do a certain thing. I'm loving him. That's what his schedule is. I'm supporting him. I'm trying to encourage him. And you know what? He misses out on a lot of stuff. And I think now that I'm older, I think I realize it was so much better for him not to be saying that, because otherwise he probably couldn't have made it with the demands on him, thinking, oh, I wish I could work this. I wish I could work this. It's still having to work like that. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes it's just getting out of the way and letting your husband have some faults without you being the one that's going to be the fault fixer. And let God deal with them. Before a woman is even close to living up to her potential, she becomes more worried about changing her husband than she is about changing herself. Chances are, the ones of us that are looking to change our husband have a lot of work to do on ourselves. I mean, I don't think that we're going to ever get done working on who we are. So, but when we do, then we can pick on a husband. But seriously, you're going to have enough things to work on yourself. You don't need to take on another person, because you're just not going to get your job done then. So you might as well just start with yourself. And then it's more fixable, and you might have more success at it, because you can control it too. But I love the way the Message Bible says in Matthew 7, 1-5. I love the way it says it. It just says, don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It's easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly sneer on your own. Do you have the nerve to say, let me wash your face for you, while your own face is distorted by contempt? It's this whole traveling road show mentality all over again, playing a holier-than-thou part instead of just living your part. Wipe that ugly sneer off your own face, and you might be fit to offer a washcloth to your neighbor. I think that is just so succinctly put, you know. Just think of where you'd be if all that energy that you were spending trying to manipulate other people, trying to get them to change, is redirected to being the best that you could be as a wife, a friend, a mother, a daughter. You know what I mean? Just it would you'd be learning unconditional love. Plus, you'll be growing so much in every character definition of the fruit of the Spirit. You'd have love, joy, peace, long-suffering. All those things are things that are only shining when they're tested. So if you really want to grow in character, you just work on yourself and you're going to get all these things. Gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. You know, those are things that are seen the best in, you know, when they're opposed. But it should be a huge relief to relinquish your job for changing your husband. I love the epiphany. I love the movie The Holiday. And one of the things this guy says to Lewis is, you're supposed to be the leading lady of your own life. And she, it was this big thing that, you know, lights go on for her. You're the living lady. You are the leading lady of your life. And so guess what? You get to pick the role that you want to live. So what role are you living in your life? What are you, what role are you taking? You get to pick it and live it out. Not your husband's role, but your role. Your lines, what you say, where you go, and what you do. In your role as a wife, lover, and friend, learn to operate, see when you're operating outside of that role. Starve it. Don't feed it. Refuse it. And make choices to move away from actions. Also, the, another reason is it will extinguish his love for you. Relationship needs to be fed just like a fire. So you want to put firewood on love fires and avoid extinguishing the love fires. So you have to, for a while, because you know I like word pictures. So for a while, I would literally put kindling wood and a fire extinguisher in my house to remind me of that. Because I realized that some of the things I was doing would add kindling wood to a fire of to have a relationship. Some of the things I was doing was definitely a fire extinguisher. And it's interesting. I found a list on, you know, in the on the computer, and it's really good. So it's actually on the website affair.com, because there's a lot of things that we do to extinguish love that we don't even realize till it's too late. So this is that some of the things that, as you look through the list, look at the things that you can do to extinguish love. These are so common, and these are just things that you have to circle and pay attention to. If you carry around and put one that you're going to work on, it's so good. But emotional neglect. Are you a scorekeeper or a fault finder? My way or the highway? A bottomless pit where enough is never enough? Spiritual neglect. You won't forgive, let the person back in. You're not transparent with someone, or you do things that are deceiving. Smoke and mirrors. That's sometimes, I think, even worse, because you act one way and you're really another way. Or you're disrespectful in your judgments. Physical neglect, where you're not, you know, grabbing his hand or, you know, talking to him. Withholding sexual fulfillment. Abandoning your physical attractiveness. You know, not working on who, you know, what you look like or who you are. Financial neglect with ongoing unemployment that isn't part of mutual understanding, that you're unable or unwilling to live by a budget, that you have hidden debt or hidden spending or overspending, or you're in legal trouble. You refuse to leave and cleave. You're not making time for adult time with each other, just even to have fun with each other. You're not making time for kids. You're not making time for your chores. You're getting too comfortable, giving up. You have irritating habits. You're independent. Remember, that's something, too, when we're the ice women. Independent, capable, efficient ice women kind of drive people away from us. We're not sharing activities together. One of the things I loved about my in-laws is they did a lot of stuff together, and that's kind of made me stop and do some things with my husband. We were more of a divide and conquer people because we had so many kids and so much going on. So a lot of times it's like, you go to this game, you go to this game. But, you know, we started to find out, like, oh, do you want to go to the hardware store with me? And I'd be thinking, not really. I went to sell. They only have 5 minutes, you know. But I would, you know, put things down and say, yeah, let's go together. I'll go with you. And my husband's been doing that with me more, too, because I start doing it with him more. And I've been really liking that. He will literally say, hey, I'll go with you. Are you going shopping? I just want to go with you to be there. I'm like, really? And it's so nice because then he helps me load the groceries. I'm not used to that. I usually don't haven't gotten it. But so it's so nice. But I love that. And I know I'm the one who started it. You know, not that I'm taking credit. I'm just encouraging you that sometimes, you know, say, hey, I'll go with you. I just want to be with you. Because then he might turn around and say the same thing. It's really nice, you know. And I know there's not always time for that when you have little kids, but as they get older, you know, then you have time to do something or go out. And when he's, you know, doing something in the yard, go sit with them or bring him a glass of water or something. It's just so nice. Also, security neglect. If you're like the attack dog, there's abuse, you're passive-aggressive, you're not being a safe haven. And then there's the kindling way. I mean, I love these things. These are just little things you should be working on all the time with all the people in your life. I mean, you know, making sure that they feel a loving emotional connection, commitment. Know that they're valued by you. Know that you respect him. He can trust you. You accept him. You appreciate him. You express affection in your words and actions. You admire him and say so out loud. Does he know you understand him or try? You're able to forgive him. You don't bring it back up. You support his values. You pray together. You respect his beliefs. You're transparent. You touch and hold his hand. Put your arm around him. Throw your arms around him when he comes in the door. And kiss him hello. You'll love that. It's so nice for someone to feel that they're coming in and they're being appreciated. Hug, be, you know, be sexually active, attracted to him. Tell him when you like his hair, if he looks really nice, you know. Financial, it's so hard, too, because a lot of times we have to take so long. I know we just went to a wedding, and I mean, it takes me longer to get ready. I'm getting my hair done, this and that. And then my husband, he's waiting outside, you know. And then I go out there, and all of a sudden, I just look at him, I go, wow, you look so nice, you know, just to remember to take that time to take a look at them. It's the time you run, you don't get to look at each other because you're late, right in the car, you know. But also, you know, you can go ahead and read these things. They're pretty much the opposite, but they're really good. And these are things in your homework, too. And it's so good if you just take time and try to integrate a few of these things into your daily life, not just with your husband. If you have kids, and or, you know, your family, or, you know, just, I know even with my own kids, you know, I need to do this. My mom's encouraged me a lot, like, to make sure that every week that I'm connecting with each one of my kids, because a lot of times, because they have so many, then if they don't connect with me, I don't really talk to them. But she said, you know, Grandma Carlo used to call her kids once a week and give them time and understand that they're busy and, you know, you can't be sitting there waiting and keeping score of which of your kids are calling you. You need to be the one. Your life is slowed down a little bit. You call them. You know, and that's really helped me because a lot of times, you know, I'll go, hey, darling, you know, and then I'll start to feel like, oh, they should be calling me. I'm their mom. But then my mom's always said to me, no, don't keep score. You pick up the phone. Your life is slower. You call them. And then I always say, you have to learn the okay, bye. You know, if you're talking to your kids, especially if they're at college or something, you know, you can call them. I never wanted to be the mother that no one called because you couldn't get off the phone because you just thought of three other things to say. So, like, if my kids say, you know, hey, I'm going into the game, but I got to go. Okay, bye. You'll talk to them again. Just say, okay, bye. Don't tell them the last thing you wanted to say. Drop the other four things. Write it down if you have to. If someone says you have to go, I just say, okay, bye. You know, and it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing because now people call me all the time and they know even if they have just a few minutes and they're between errands or something that if they have to go, I'm like, okay, bye. You know, and it's nice because otherwise people are afraid. I know I'm afraid to call some people because they don't say okay, bye. And, you know, I mean, seriously, and I love talking to some people, but I can't call them because of that reason. So I just love the okay bye. It really is nice. You know, it's good because it's like,
we all have that person in our head, you know.
Yeah, I know, I know, and I just I
do
love.
Do you have an hour?
That's yeah. All I know, and I love connecting with them, and I would connect with them so much more if they could get the okay bye thing down. But they're not reading the book. I wonder if I put that in the book. I always say, I wonder if I don't remember that in the book. I know I always said it in the class, but I don't know if I ever put it in there. Okay, anyways. So we don't want to be self-righteous and proud. I love what Shakespeare said. A true friend is one that knows you as you are, understands where you've been, accepts what you have become, and still gently allows you to grow. Oh. And God can use your marriage to teach you how to love. If you don't run from the challenges that marriage presents, your marriage will make you a more unselfish, stronger, and wiser woman. Love covers transgressions, and hatred stirs up contentions. When you're a hatred, strife is going to follow. But when you choose love, it fills up what's lacking in other people's life. And I love that scripture says love covers a multitude of sins. Because it not only covers it in other people's life, if you love somebody, you're not going to have that sin in your life of, you know, against them. Like feeling proud or feeling bitter or feeling, you know, anything against them. So you're not going to judge them or talk about them. When you have love in your heart, it's going to cover up sin in your own life too and in theirs. So it's really a win-win. But also, what about the things that really, really do bother you? Well, I believe the best about my kids and my husband. And really, if they see that, they're going to really know that you're not so nitpicky. And if there's something that you're really going to ask them that you just cannot and don't want to live with, they're going to be so much more open if it's not like a list of 3 pages of things. You know, and it's just not everything. So I just think it's so good. I love that song so much that you should see how much royalties I paid to put it in this book. But it is so good. It says, you know, "Who Will Love Me for Me" by J.J. Heller. I just love it because it says, "I will love you for you, not for what you've done or for or what you will become. I'll love you for you. I'll give you the love that you never knew." And you can read the whole thing, and it says, "Who will love me for me?" And there's so many times, and don't you just want someone that you can just feel comfortable with that just loves you for who you are, for who you're not? You don't have to prove anything to them. They just love you. And we just want to be those things to the people in our lives. You know, just love people. In spite of their shortcomings, really loving is the strongest force that there is. Plus, it doesn't believe that you're just a better person. We're not going to have time to go through all this, but doing small things in great love, knowing, you should read through this, it's really some good things, but knowing the difference between toddler love that's driven by perceived needs and adult love that's driven by values. And I think we talked about, what about Bob? I hear myself sounding really needy. I just think of what about Bob? I need. We can all get there, you know. Oh, stop needing so much. It's like, oh my gosh. You know, stop criticizing your husband and others. Look for good things and rehearse them. Build up rather than tear down people and relationships. If you've developed a habit for being critical, stop today. And we go through some pretty funny things that happened. And the poem about friendship is great. You want to read it. Just because it just talks about a good friend will take what's worth keeping and blow the rest away with gentleness. But also, I'll close with this. Request to a wife. It's just before chapter 5. "Dear wife, I need adoring looks, the kind I read about in books. I want esteem, I want affection. Please, darling, beam in my direction. Don't, dearest, frown and squint your eyes. Don't cut me down to proper size. Oh, do not fear and do not doubt me. I want to hear the good about me. So if you'd be in married clover, make over me. Don't make me over." So that's what we're going to close with. A woman said that it's become clear that many marital disagreements cannot be solved. In one study, researchers interviewed the same couples 4 years later, 70% of the people were still talking and fighting about the same problems in the same way that they were 4 years earlier. The result is now a push for acceptance therapy, encouraging people to accept the enduring foibles of their spouses rather than trying to change them. Putting up with these habits will help you as well. You'll end up liking yourself even if no one changes. So this week we're going to take a challenge, and let's see what our challenge is. Okay, it's going to be knowing when to shut up and knowing when to speak up, including speaking up about what you admire and shutting up when you're faced with things that you don't admire. And let's do the fire extinguisher and the wood thing too, because there's a lot of different examples. Pick out some of those things that you're really going to work on and make them particular and do it as a homework assignment that you can really start kindling the things that you want to grow and extinguishing things you want to starve. And don't do the things that extinguish love. Do the things that are going to kindle love. So, all right, let's just pray. Thank you, Lord, for this awesome time together. We went through so many things, and control issues are huge today. Everybody wants things their own way. We get it our own way at Starbucks. We get our own way wherever we go. And then we think that we should just get everything, the world just revolve around us when we're at home too. We want to break that mold. We want to purposefully think of other people. We want to really learn to accept and love our spouse and the people in our lives, that we can let them know that they are enough for us, that we love them just for who they are, for who they aren't. We don't expect perfection. We're not looking to perfect them. We're not going to nitpick them apart, but we're just going to enjoy them and enjoy the people in our lives. We ask for your grace and your mercy to do this. Help us to see how you've done that to enjoy us, and help us to give that same grace to others. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. It's going to be a long time before we meet together, which is such a bummer. I usually wouldn't have taken this long of a break.